In 2005, coal was used to generate over 50% of America's electricity. Think about that. Coal, just 14 years ago, half of America's electricity was generated from that source. But an energy revolution is upon us. So what will that mean for your pocketbook? Joining us to discuss this very important topic, Jack Kerfoot. He's a scientist, energy expert, and author of Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. He's been working in the energy industry since the 1970s, when America was paralyzed by an energy crisis. Jack, thanks so much for joining the program. I was just a boy then, but I do remember it. I do remember sitting in the back of the Buick station wagon with my parents, waiting in excessively long lines just to fuel up.
Andrew, it's a pleasure to be on your program today. Unfortunately, what people don't realize is that in 1940, America was effectively OPEC of the world for oil and gas. We were the largest exporter of oil in the world.
No kidding.
But by 1951, we become a net importer because the booming economy after the Second World War, and of course, the automobile. And ultimately, what happened starting in 1951 is our dependence on foreign fuel and foreign oil began to steadily increase until the 1970s, when we had the oil embargo associated with Israel being attacked by Egypt and Syria. And when the United States offered humanitarian aid, that's when the oil embargo was placed on the U.S. And we have been developing energy policies over the last, since that time, that have primarily been reactive to oil price spikes and to energy access to America. So the key thing is renewable energy, to me, offers America the opportunity to be totally independent in the future.
Now, as I stated in the intro, in 2005, coal was used to generate over 50% of America's electricity. That's changed.
Well, what happened is that in 2005, oil prices had hit $60 a barrel and were projected to go higher, and ultimately went to over $100 a barrel just 2 years later. So it was a bipartisan bill, and it provided tax credits for a wide range of energy sources, from nuclear to oil and gas and to renewable energy. The energy tax credits to renewable energy effectively jump-started the renewable energy industry in the world. It started off primarily in the Great Plains states, and interestingly enough, it was entrepreneurs like a gentleman who I've known for 20 years, T. Boone Pickens, who was actually in the oil industry, saw this as an opportunity for America to move to renewable, sustainable energy, started building the wind farms. And what happened is, as they built the wind farms, the technology improved and the output capacity for these wind turbines increased from 1 megawatt to today over 10 megawatts for each of these. So the price of renewable energy has steadily gone down. So what has started to happen about 2 years later is the utilities were looking at the high cost of power from nuclear power and coal, because coal was continuing to escalate in prices. So they started to move to the cheaper fuel sources, which were wind, solar, hydro, and also natural gas. So steadily, this has started to change. So, like I said, in April of this year, renewable energy generated 23% of America's total power, and coal was only 22%. It's projected that coal will be under 10% within another decade and potentially virtually non-existent by 2035, 2040, simply because of cost and also the air quality issues as well.
So even these attempts to get more oil through fracking, what is that? The oil industry on life support?
Well, we have to realize that when we talk about a conventional oil and gas well, the field for that will last maybe 15 or maybe 20 years, but an economic limit of a well that's been hydraulically fracked is about 4 to 5 years. And quite candidly, we also have to realize that fossil fuels are not renewable. Coal mines get mined out and the jobs are lost. Oil fields are produced and the wells are shut in and production is closed. British Petroleum estimates that the world has about 50 years of proven oil reserves left in the world. And right now, we are consuming about 37 billion barrels of oil around the world every year. And we're only replacing about 2.5 to 5% of those reserves every year. So ultimately, we will see the continued decline of oil. Demand will continue to outstrip supply, which means we'll see more price volatility and it will get increasingly expensive, whereas the renewable energy will continue to see price stability and actually prices decline as technology improves the output capacity for the wind turbines and the solar panels and the efficiencies become better.
Well, while we're talking about price, how does the cost of power from fossil fuel, nuclear energy, and renewable energy compare?
Well, in 2017, the Lazard Bank, which is a private bank, did an independent study, and they took out all the costs for tax credits. And the cheapest source of fuel with no tax credits or incentives, looking at typical operating costs, capital expenditures, was onshore wind. And the average cost for onshore wind right now in the U.S. is 5.2 cents per kilowatt hour. The average price for electricity across the United States is 13.3 cents per kilowatt hour. And that's also the price that the average residential price for electricity in the state of Delaware as well. Now, after onshore wind, the next cheapest is solar, followed by hydro, and then natural gas. The cost for coal is 2.5, almost 3 times the cost of onshore wind. So that's a major cost factor alone is the reason the utilities have been moving from fossil fuel, particularly coal and even natural gas, to renewable energy.
And yet the wind farms haven't really begun to show here in our state, not yet anyway. I want to address where I did see it, and that will lead me into my next question. But first, a quick reset for anyone joining us. I'm speaking with Jack Kerfoot. He's a scientist, energy expert, and author of Fueling America, An Insider's Journey. And he's here to tell us how America's burgeoning energy revolution, well, it's even beyond burgeoning, it's here, what it will mean for your pocketbook. Recently vacationed in northern Michigan, and we decided to drive there from our state, and was passing through an area in about central Michigan, the lower peninsula, that is. It was a town known as Ithaca, Michigan, and there were turbines everywhere, Jack. I mean, the landscape, it was actually quite impressive. I'd never seen that many. I've seen some in the Lehigh Valley as you travel I-81. In Ithaca, Michigan, you can tell it's very much a part of their economy. My question is, does every region in the United States have the same types of renewable energy?
Andrew, that's an excellent question. Of course, if we look at the climates across the United States, they're very, very diverse. If we look at the Great Plains states, they're very rich in wind and solar. If we look at regions, Pacific Northwest or in the Northeast, you'll find strong hydro, onshore wind, offshore wind, also geothermal, particularly in the Pacific Northwest. So the answer is no. One of the issues we have to realize is that not every region in the U.S. can go 100% renewable. Most of the U.S. can, but regions, let's say, like the southeastern U.S., from Louisiana over to Florida, their resources are really solar and biofuel or biomass, the wood products that generate to basically power their thermal power plants, turbines. Okay. And there simply is not enough of that solar power. Even if you take a state like Florida, which is now the third most populated state in the U.S., passing New York in population, and if you cover every square blade of grass and every rooftop with a solar panel, and they are aggressively putting solar panels up there, you still will not generate enough power to maintain the electricity that's needed for the schools and hospitals and houses throughout that state. So the answer is most of the U.S., let's say 75-80% of the U.S., the answer is yes. For those other regions, they will have to look for other sources, and that most logical source in the southeast may actually be nuclear because it does have zero greenhouse gas emissions, although there are other issues and concerns with nuclear as well.
Are coal, oil, and natural gas companies conspiring to block the development of renewable energy, do you feel?
Well, I think the answer to the question is yes and no. The answer to yes is you're seeing in some states, utility boards in each state have to approve any new project. And you are seeing in some states that do have coal production pushback or influence trying to slow down the closing of coal mines by utilities. The utilities are making these decisions because their only concern is, first of all, sustainable, reliable power, and two, cost. And so the cost for coal is getting higher, and so they're making that move. So in some cases, there is obstructions or resistance to the move to renewable energy. But when we talk about the oil and gas industry, actually, we shouldn't call them oil and gas anymore. We need to call them energy companies. Mm. Companies like British Petroleum, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Total, Shell, or Royal Dutch Shell, they all have been moving into a wide range of greenhouse energy products, from offshore wind farms, onshore wind farms, solar parks, charging stations. Again, with the power stations in Europe, they're starting more and more to put these charging stations in their fueling stations across Europe. Also, carbon capture systems and battery storage systems. So they're actually making the move Companies like the National Utility out of Denmark have now virtually moved away from fossil fuel completely and are completely renewable energy companies. The Norwegian National Oil Company have basically really aggressively started to expand in offshore wind. And that offshore wind revolution, which has been going on in Europe for 10, maybe 15 years, is now just beginning to take off along the eastern seaboard of the U.S., including offshore Delaware.
So all this is great news. What can federal and state governments do to accelerate the development of renewable energy?
Well, I think that's a key question. I mean, we've seen different proposals and different forms of Green New Deals, but what people haven't quite addressed yet is the permitting process to build a site or to get a site for any power plant, whether it's coal, oil, wind, or solar, and also the permitting process it takes to lay the power lines from the power plant to the actual utility requires approvals from the cities, the counties, the states, and the federal government, multiple agencies in each of these. And we need to look for ways to streamline that process. Interestingly enough, the governor of New Jersey, just north of you, went through a major streamlining of their power permitting process for offshore wind. And he basically said, look, a lot of these permitting that we have to do, fishery permit, environmental permit, seafloor permit for offshore wind farms, can be done in parallel, and we can do these and then bring this data together to see if there are any objections to moving forward. That streamlining of the process has shortened the cycle time for their first wind farm by 2 or possibly 3 years. They expect to have their first offshore wind farm fully operational by 2020. And when you compress that time scale of something that's a $2 or $3 or $4 billion capital expenditure, you reduce costs, which are immediately passed on to the consumers. Also, I would always argue that tax credits are the incentive to drive competition and investment of the private sector. So tax credits and charging stations, and there recently was a bipartisan bill that was unanimously approved in the subcommittee to move forward with charging stations across the United States, and President Trump even tweeted out support for it. And it will go up for vote in the fall of this year to provide tax credits and financial incentives to move forward with charging stations for electric vehicles and even for hydrogen charging vehicles.
Exciting times. It leads me to my final question, which was my original one. In a word or phrase, what will America's energy revolution mean for our pocketbook?
It will mean lower cost, it will mean cleaner air, and it will mean a secure energy future for America.
Jack Kerfoot, scientist, energy expert, and author of Fueling America, an Insider's Journey. Thanks so much for your time.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Andrew.